Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Kai Wright, an editor at The Nation magazine, and I'm sitting in for Brian. And our next guest is C. Nicole Mason. She's the executive director of the Center for Research and Policy in the Public Interest. She's taught at Spelman College and New York University. And she's here to talk to us about her new book, a memoir titled Born Bright, A Young Girl's Journey from Nothing to Something in America. The book wrestles with this distinction between individual achievements and talents and the broader forces that shape our lives, that create opportunities and create barriers. Nicole, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here and to be today's the pub date for the book. So,
oh well, congratulations.
I'm super excited to be here.
Excellent. Well, let's begin with, you know, you wrote a memoir about your life. I gather the central idea is to take on this notion that we all make it on our own, that we rise and fall by our own strength, and you want to offer a more complicated idea than that. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. What I wanted to do in Born Bright was to tell a different story about poverty, one that hasn't been told from an insider perspective. There's a lot of narratives floating around about if you work hard enough, you'll make it, and when you don't make it, it's your fault. And so what I wanted to do is challenge that narrative and say there are a lot of things that prevent people from escaping poverty. In fact, what we know is that only 4% of people who start out in poverty actually make it out. So that means 96% don't. And so I really want to explore why that is.
Yeah. And so, listeners, we want to hear from you. And we want to hear from you about there's a good and bad side to this, right? That who helped you? Who and what helped you? We want to hear about your barriers, what things that might have stood in your way, but also what institutions helped you in your life. Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. So, Nicole, let's start with your childhood growing mm-hmm. up. You grew up in California and Las Vegas, correct?
Yes.
And so describe the nothing of your subtitle, right? What was your childhood like in tangible terms? What kind of opportunities and barriers
so
did you face?
So I was raised by a teenage single mother. She was 16 when she had me, and a year later she had my brother. And shortly thereafter, because she had to care for both of us, she dropped out of high school. So, and it was during the 80s, and Ronald Reagan was talking about this other America of broken promises and the threat of people, women, and families on welfare. And my brother and myself and my mother, that's who he was talking mm-hmm. about. And so the expectations for what I could become were really low. And when we looked around our community, and I didn't know it at the time, I have to say, I didn't know I was poor until I got to college. but you could see from the neighborhood, you know, we had poor quality schools, our libraries didn't have as many books, high levels of crime and violence. And so, and that's where we lived. So we were geographically isolated. And so when you talk about those conditions and what's possible in terms of success and opportunity, anyone, any child, any family who is able to catapult and make it out of those circumstances is seen as extraordinary. But I want to push back on that and say that shouldn't be the case.
Because in fact, you have gone on to great things, right? And I imagine that many people look at you as, in fact, as proof of the fact that individuals can rise above any circumstance, that on our own backs, on the strength of our own labor, we can lift ourselves up.
Yeah, and I think for Democrats, for example, I'm proof that if you work hard enough, there is the American dream, and you can achieve it. And for Republicans, I'm also proof that poor people are poor because they want to be. And what I try to say is, like, no, that's not the case. Like, in fact, in my community, in my neighborhood, I knew many, many smart kids and many, many people in families that worked hard every day, and they just weren't able to make it. And so I probe why that is.
And what for you as a kid, thinking back, I mean, what were some of the you've sort of described the broader milieu. What are some of the actual barriers that you faced that, you know, when you would go to school or when you were trying to pursue opportunity? What did that mean for you on a day-to-day level?
Well, we struggled with episodic homelessness, so we moved around a lot. Food insecurity, violence broadly, but I didn't see it that way. I didn't see it as violence. I saw it as my community. Right. And also failing schools. I can't say that enough. And I didn't even know they were failing. I didn't know that we didn't have the same kind of books and lab equipment that other kids across the city in different zip codes had. And so it was really a day of reckoning when I found out that these inequalities were by design. And I really felt cheated. And so for me, if I had to say what helped me or what it was my, I love to read from a very early age. And so school is where I found my outlet. And I had teachers who were very supportive and encouraging. At the same time, I also had teachers who were like, this is it for you. And, I'm a difficult person, so so I just sort of said, you know, this is, I'm going to see what I can do.
You know, it is a resonant topic for me as well. I did not grow up poor. I grew up quite middle class, but I was a difficult kid, and I was an African American in a largely white school, and I had behavior problems. And I still remember very specific individuals who pulled me aside and kept me from being kicked out of school. And that set me on the right path, even inside these complicated institutions. I wonder about that as well in terms of, you pointed out some individual teachers. We think about failing schools as just failing schools. It's just terrible. It's just a terrible place. But you're saying that there were individual teachers there that really shaped your life.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I relied on them heavily because we're talking about being able to negotiate and navigate systems. So, for example, when it came time to apply to college, I had no idea about financial aid, what a 4-year institution versus a 2-year institution. I couldn't even tell you the difference between a state college and an Ivy League institution. And so in that instance, information is currency. So I needed to rely on people who knew to provide me with that information. And so in a real sense, they were gatekeepers. And I was bold enough and brave enough to seek out that information. And when told no, keep pushing. But what I want to say is that it shouldn't be that hard to access that information. And for many students who are not necessarily looking or don't know where to go, they just don't get the information that they need to access opportunity.
Yeah. I'm going to go to a caller, Josie in the Bronx. Josie, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
All right.
I can empathize with what she's saying because I grew up in a poor community. I'm from an immigrant family. I'm the first one to have attended college and be able to get a higher degree. And I can tell you, I initially, it was very hard because as a student, from a teenager's perspective, growing up in New York City, it was very difficult, you know, being able to get a job, being able to have your parents help you through college, even financially. It was very hard, very difficult. And I can tell you, I took public assistance as a tool, you know, which is not what many do. But it worked for me. Public assistance, Section 8, all that worked in my favor to be able to go to college, to alleviate a little bit of the barriers that we have, all the challenges that we encounter. Even within our own people, we find encouragement of what we can and we're capable of doing, right? But I did find it as a tool and a support, and I was able to go to college, graduate, and continue on and get my master's degree in social work. And even today, that's what I do. I'm a social work, I'm in the field of social services, and that's what I do. I actually tell all the time to my clients, this is not it. It can be of help and support.
You go, Josie. I'm glad to hear that. That this idea, the stigmas associated with social support, and it's all it's part of, you know, we have this debate where it's always in our politics, you know, it's either you're responsible for yourself, you have to take responsibility yourself, you have to have personal responsibility, or, oh, you know, there's the systems are the problem, and it's either or, when reality it's both, right? And that's the social safety net is what allows it to be both. It allows us to both take responsibility for ourselves and deal with the systems. I gather that has also been your experience.
Yeah, I think we need both. I think we do need the social safety net, and it's shrinking, and it's actually virtually non-existent. And so we need to think about ways to make sure that not only low-income families, but middle-class families who are also teetering on the edge, when there's a crisis or a financial emergency, they too are able to pull on resources so that they can make ends meet. And I think one of the things that's really important in thinking about who's making the policies, many times what's interesting about the book and about myself is that I'm on both sides of the table. So I've lived in poverty, but I also have a policy perspective and lens. And that's not the case for most of the people making the policy. They've not lived it. And so a lot of what they believe should be done is ideologically driven. And based on their own biases. But when you ask women and you ask mothers and you ask families what they need, they'll tell you just what Josie said. Like, I need these things so that I can have a better life for myself and my family.
Right. Aaron in Teaneck, New Jersey, welcome to WNYC.
Hi. Great show. So I grew up in East L.A. In the 70s and 80s and eventually in other parts of L.A. And the experience I had was really more of having a lot of nudges, a lot of people around me, older, you know, a few years to maybe 10, and all their families, very church-going, very, you know, kind of humble, maybe not intellectual, but it didn't matter. They always kind of kicked you in the rear end and kept you on the straight and narrow. And then that really just kind of, and reading a lot, and then basically just taking advantage of opportunities, jobs, college, went in the Army, just things like that, and that just kind of launched you. And I'm not saying that's a perfect template for everybody, but I do think we miss kind of the support model of one. You know, we get very public policy and ideological about, you know, there's 48 million people who don't have this and 20 million. Like, there's an automatic solution that you just get a card called poor people to middle class and punch it every day, and somehow you're going to get there. And the truth is, from what I've seen, is, you know, you need thousands of little supports throughout your life to support you to get up.
Again, this sounds like, Nicole, the sort of either-or setup of, do we have, is it about our own communities and our networks, or is it about the supports that we can get? We're echoing in that conversation.
Yeah, I think it's both, but I want to point out that when we look at communities and what I like to call connected communities, those are the communities that have all the prerequisites for success and opportunity. So they have quality schools, quality institutions, low levels of crime, low levels of unemployment. People have high levels of home ownership. So all those things are present in communities. And communities with high levels of poverty tend to be disconnected, meaning all those things are missing. And so even if you have a community that's supportive, and we can look at working class communities and see that there are people there who are supportive and love the children and the families that are there. But when those things are missing, it makes it really hard for people to pursue opportunity in a real way, because they're occupied with just trying to maintain and get those things that other communities take for granted.
Yeah. And you are now a mother, as I understand it. I think you have twins, correct?
I have twins.
How old are they?
They are 6-year-old twins.
So
that's
are
boy, girl.
Are you in a conversation with them about these things? They are facing a very different childhood than the one that you grew up in. How are you talking to them about their future?
So what's really amazing is that the kind of things that I thought about as a kid, whether it be where my next meal would come from, you know, if we had a place to stay, they don't have to think about those things. And although I'm a single mother by choice, my experience as a single mother is drastically different than my mother's experience as a single mother raising two children. And so when we do have these conversations or we're walking down the street and they see a person who's homeless, they say, they ask questions about what it means to be poor. And the other day I said, you know, I used to be poor. And they said, you know, they couldn't wrap their heads around it. So I'm happy that the things that I didn't have, they attend a high performing public school. They don't have to worry about where their next meal is coming from. And those are the gifts that I can give them. And yeah.
And I imagine both race and gender are part of that conversation, or are they? I don't want to turn it into an advice show, but for thinking about people who are raising children in privilege and their relationship to the rest of the world, how do you think parents should be talking to their kids about these things?
Honestly and frankly, because, for example, my mother, my daughter, because they're thinking about these things. So my daughter asked the other day, she said, well, is that man poor because he doesn't know how to manage his money? Hmm. And I said, no, that's not why he's poor. She's like, well, I don't get it, you know. And to walk her through that, poverty doesn't mean that you are bad or can't manage your money or don't. It's that you don't have enough money. There's other barriers, whether it be she asked, well, where does he live? You know, so really trying to talk about the world outside of themselves in a real age appropriate way. And then as they get older, expanding that conversation.
Thank you, Nicole. We're going to have to leave it there. Your book, thank you for writing it. Thank you for bringing this perspective into the world. It's C. Nicole Mason, author of Born Bright, A Young Girl's Journey from Nothing to Something in America. Coming up, into the minds of Olympic athletes. Stay with us.